Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, fj@offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first released as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime between 2 and 10 years ago. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on April 24th of 2011. Under the headline, Gallon House Covered Bridge, Ground Zero in Battle Over Booze. Here we go. If Oregon had ever had its very own civil war, it probably would have been over a bottle of scotch, and it probably would have broken out at the Gallon House Bridge in Marion County. The Gallon House was a covered bridge about halfway between Silverton and Mount Angel in the heart of the Willamette Valley, and when it was first built, the entire state of Oregon was dry. Or rather, it was supposed to be. A state law, promoted by Governor Oswald West, a teetotaling progressive with a friendly state legislature at his disposal, wrote into the state constitution that the, quote, manufacture, sale, or advertisement of intoxicating liquor would henceforth be verboten. In Silverton, the Protestant majority heartily approved, and a powerful temperance organization, the Good Templars, threw its weight behind the state law as well. But Mount Angel? Not that kind of town. Founded by families from South Germany and Switzerland, it was as overwhelmingly Catholic as Silverton was overwhelmingly Protestant. Catholics, of course, took seriously the biblical injunction to take wine with communion. They weren't going to, as they saw it, take Oz West's word over that of Jesus Christ. In this, they were joined by lots of non-Catholics who liked to drink once in a while and didn't appreciate the governor telling them they couldn't have one. So in much the same way that neighbors give each other packages of frozen Lockerbie stamped not to be sold, folks got around the law by giving each other spirits, hiding the money transfer that made it a sale rather than a gift. Although this was in utter violation of the spirit of the state law, it was perfectly legal, so long as nobody wrote out a receipt or if the receipt was for the bottle rather than its contents. This sort of thing would not wash in Silverton, where the municipal code got brave, where the state law got shy, but in Mount Angel it worked fine. And so Mount Angel bottle and jug merchants did a brisk trade taking care of thirsty visitors from Silverton. Most of these didn't make the 5-mile journey all the way to Mount Angel, though. Instead, they'd slip out of town on a back road that few traveled and go about 2 miles out of town to the Gallon House Bridge, a brand new, at the time, covered bridge across Abiqua Creek. On the Mount Angel side of the creek was a little shack, the Gallon House, at which the thirsty visitor could pick up a bottle or jug or fruit jar to add to his collection, you know, once you had emptied out the booze that just happened to be inside of it. Naturally, this caused some tension between the civic leaders of the two towns, although I haven't heard of any serious incidents having resulted. Perhaps that's because the federal government stepped in a few years later with the Volstead Act, putting the entire country under prohibition and driving the whole liquor trade in both towns underground. This amusing little story says a lot about Oregon's odd relationship with alcohol since its founding. The state was home to the first brewery west of the Mississippi River, Blitz Weinhard Brewery in Oregon, established 1856. But downtown Portland restaurants seem to have eventually gotten a bit too diligent about supporting their local brewery. As the story goes, a half century later in 1912, Portland industrialist Simon Benson started noticing his workers coming back from lunch slightly drunk because there's nothing non-alcoholic available in downtown Portland for them to drink. Benson, when he learned about the problem, invested $10,000 to have water fountains installed all over Portland, and these are the famous Benson Bubbler fountains, which are still in service today. There were other issues, too. Not the least of which was the fact that right up until about 1910, it was very dangerous to get drunk in the presence of strangers in certain waterfront watering holes. You were likely to wake up with a lump on your head and a brand new job as a merchant mariner, headed across the Pacific on a sailing ship to whose captain you had been delivered unconscious and wrapped in a tarp the night before by that friendly stranger who was buying you drinks. Perhaps that's why West and his fellow prohibitionists found the state so amenable to outlawing beer and liquor a couple years later. All the really hard drinkers had lost fingers in a drunken sawmill accident. gotten deported by the Shanghai gangs or met some other similarly horrific fate, no one was left to vote no. I say this with tongue firmly in cheek, of course, but it is certainly possible that people at least took these abuses into consideration when deciding whether to support the governor's plan. Today, Oregon is widely thought of as the microbrewing movement's home state. By 1994, there was more brewing activity per person in Portland than anywhere else in the country, even Milwaukee and St. Louis, although that may have changed since Blitz Weinhard was sold and moved its operations out of town. Even so, it's been a while since anyone's been shanghaied out of a waterfront bar or forced to choose between dehydration and drunkenness on the job, so it looks like when it comes to spirits, Oregon has finally found a good balance. Key sources in this story have included works by James Andrew Long, Ralph Friedman, and Lee H. Nelson. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 550 stories, originally created and published as newspaper columns and subsequently podcasts in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers H.P. Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, Algernon Blackwood, Edgar Rice Burroughs, the great ones. For details, please see pulp-lit.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0, which basically means you can do anything you want to with the content. Copy it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, turn it into a tweet storm, whatever you like as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. For full details, see offbeatoregon.com/CC. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday morning, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you even miss it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.